didn't work last time when we tried it. I don't know what the fuck happened there.
I don't know. I really, really don't have a clue. I think we were trying to, I was trying to use like far too many programs all at once, and my computer kind of just fritzed. But I was thinking of, you know, as I've got lots of free time, I might break the episodes up and start putting them on YouTube. Just the video.
I'm going to go live when we start recording.
Okay, cool.
So don't say anything controversial, otherwise it'll go to everyone and we'll get...
Controversial? Like Donald Trump's an asshat? No, that's not controversial.
Oh, good. That's not controversial. That's just the fucking truth.
No. The Queen is actually a lizard person and she should be killed straight away.
Controversial.
Ah, damn, I can't think of anything controversial to say. Oh, well. Let us begin the show. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Armchair Producers, episode 61. I am one of your hosts, Jewish Terran, alongside the man, the myth, the slick motherfucker, Mr. Travis Croft. How are you, sir?
I am fine and dandy. I told you not to say anything controversial.
You. How are you doing?
I am doing well. If anybody is listening later, the reason I asked my co-host not to say anything controversial was we are going live on Facebook, sort of.
we will see.
It's via my Facebook page today because I couldn't be asked trying to figure out how to do it on the actual podcast's Facebook page. So I will figure that out in future, but this is just a trial run. I see one person watching, two people watching. Emma Good.
Actual people.
There's more people than ever listen to our podcast ever. Yes, Mel, again, I am recording the podcast. I'm being creative. Don't interrupt my process.
God, such an artiste.
I know, right? It's like these people, they don't believe in me. They'll pay one day. But I've asked George to refrain from conversations about lizard people.
I will, however, mention that just for those who don't know, we as Armchair Producers, we have two very famous listeners, one Donald Trump and the other, far more important to the world, Kirk Cameron.
Kirk's a big fan.
Yeah,
Mackenzie is, but it's such a laugh how he ignores all your tweets. That's classic.
I know. He's the cad.
He's maybe you think that he doesn't know who we are. It's all a giant laugh. But George used to have stats on who was listening every week, and one week it was always somebody in the United States, but no idea actually, wouldn't tell us actually where in the United States the listener was.
I managed to get it down one time to Washington, D.C. So there's someone.
There you go. It's like, who is the kind of person out there who's going to have the capabilities to sort of game the system so George can't tell where they are? I mean, some pretty high-tech shit going on in George's hacky space.
I've watched the hackers a few times.
It's surely only someone with that capability of like access to the NSA and CIA would potentially be able to hide their identity that well. So
I've been watching a podcast that I'm embarrassed to reveal. So can you hide my VPN?
If you're listening, Donald, I would recommend refunding the WHO. That was a dick move.
Come on, he's doing that just because he needs someone else to be the villain because he's not willing to admit that he made mistakes.
And if you're not going to refund the WHO, I would prefer you refund our podcast. True. Could use solid gold toilets.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, for the two people who might still be listening live.
Two.
If you have not listened to the show, we are a kind of weekly podcast where we talk a lot of shit, usually focused around movies, TV, games, bit of wrestling, music. But yeah, so that's what you're tuning in for, and hopefully we will be mildly entertaining and incredibly charming. So, Travis,
what have you been doing for anything, I suppose? I'm starting, Emma. Well,
I can start if you like.
My friend Michaela is saying it's totally Trump, and she's right. and we have no evidence to back that up, but that seems like it's a legit reason as any.
If there's one thing that Trump has taught us, is who needs fucking evidence?
Who the fuck needs evidence? It's not really a thing anymore. Evidence, that's what...
evidence is subjective.
It's what those losers want. you blew it up. I actually haven't had... I don't know, maybe it's the lockdown or what it is. In fact, I'm at home all the time. I haven't really, you think I'd be chewing through content, especially with a 4-day weekend. Hasn't really been the case, but I did get a chance to check out a couple of new things that worth talking about. And the first one I'd like to mention is Avenue 5. Okay. So this is available in Australia on Foxtel, which I bowed to pressure and signed up for their 10-day trial and found a few things worth watching. I'm sticking with it for now. And Avenue 5 is worth watching because it is created by the great Armando Iannucci. Am I pronouncing that wrong?
Armando Iannucci, yes.
Iannucci, so this is the man behind In the Loop, Death of Stalin, Veep. If you've ever seen any of that kind of comedy that he's done before in the past, you'd have a pretty good idea about whether he's the kind of dude you want to watch. I mean, Veep, for those who don't know, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, very highly rated, wins all these sorts of awards. The Thick of It as well, that's the other one.
He worked with Chris Morris a lot, certainly in the earlier years.
I'm Alan Partridge, which is, again, some might say a British comedy classic. I'm not a massive fan myself, but like it's still very well received and well known around the traps if you like TV comedy. That said though, he has a certain brand of comedy, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
And the word that comes to mind is dry.
Oh yeah.
Sarcastic, very sly.
Yes.
Comedy.
Snide.
This is a complete departure. I think this is more like Jackass in space.
Okay. No,
I'm completely lying. It's classic Iannucci. It's dry, sarcastic, underhanded. It's dark. It's fucking great. So this stars Hugh Laurie in its main role, playing in actually a role that I think might actually be a nod to his sort of persona, in the sense that he is a British man who pretends to be an American. The basic plot of a film, the troubled crew of Avenue 5, a space cruise ship filled with spoiled, rich, snotty space tourists, must try and keep everyone calm after their ship gets thrown off course into space and ends up needing 3 years to return to Earth. Hugh Laurie, sorry?
I was just thinking about all of the cruise ships that were sort of like set adrift at the first part of the coronavirus.
So it's topical in a sense. Yes, Michaela, you did get free packages and multi-screen on Foxtel. We're open to taking sponsorship by Foxtel. I'd just like us to, anyone who's listening to know, we've always been for sale.
Yes.
We are completely, anyone. We have no moral quandaries that we will not sell out for. We are selling out. That's for sure.
Incidentally, this episode is produced by Forrest. Thank you very much for your support, Eric. We do appreciate it.
Eric, and happy birthday for this week, I believe.
Yes, for last Friday.
Okay.
Yes.
And I think I saw a pop-up on Facebook. You're right, it's topical in the sense that cruise ships, you wouldn't really want to be on a cruise right now, and this is a little bit like that, the sense, as it sort of says, in the first episode, the ship's thrown off course, and instead of getting home in a few, in 8 weeks or something, it's now 3 years. Hugh Laurie plays the captain, Ryan Clark, and as I said, he is actually a British man who pretends to be American because he's not actually a captain. He's actually an actor hired to portray a captain because the ship's actually automated. And so it's a sort of regular, hilarious sort of segment says like he has to sort of be the inspirational leader of this cruise in trying circumstances while he actually has no fucking idea what he's doing. Or what's going on. The only sort of competent character is played by Lenora Crichlow, who I'm not familiar with. She plays Billy McAvoy, who's an engineer who actually understands what's going on, but sort of has to consistently see to Hugh Laurie's Ryan Clark, who is the person who, yeah, everybody thinks is in charge. Other pop from familiar names would be Josh Gad.
Mm-hmm.
Probably best. I think he played Olaf in Frozen, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And he sort of pops up a few other places. You'd probably be familiar with his voice. He plays the entrepreneur, businessman, Herman Judd, who actually controls the, is actually his cruise ship, his cruise line.
Okay.
Judd Cruises. And he sort of plays a, I guess, a parody of your standard sort of extraordinarily rich tech entrepreneur who overrates his own importance and genius. It's sort of just a character who's constantly getting in the way. The other one you'd be familiar with would be Zach Woods. I'm pretty sure Zach was in Silicon Valley, if I'm not mistaken. But I think you and I remember Zach best for
For the best part of Ghostbusters.
The only funny joke in Ghostbusters is Zach Woods had one joke at the start of a movie, and that was the only time I laughed in that movie.
Yeah.
criminally underused. I actually really quite like his character in Silicon Valley. Andrew, who's tuned in now on Facebook Live, we are talking about Avenue 5, which is on Foxtel. Mm. I was saying Zach Woods, I think he's very funny on Silicon Valley. He's very funny. This is sort of a nihilistic... a nihilistic sort of cruise director.
Right.
He's truly one of the highlights of a show for me. Jessica St. Clair, I am familiar with as well. The reason I'm familiar with Jessica St. Clair, though, is she starred in the American reboot of The IT Crowd, which has probably... at least said about that, the better. Yeah. So we're also, Ethan Phillips is a notable inclusion as well. People will be like, who the fuck is Ethan Phillips? Ethan Phillips played Neelix in Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there he is.
Probably about 3 or 4 episodes to nail him. This doesn't have a great rating online, 6.4 on IMDb, which is, I think, a bit unfair. I really enjoyed it, but I guess it really comes down to, do you like the comedy?
Yeah, I was going to say, is this a kind of accessible comedy? Because Armando Iannucci has got a very specific style, like you said, but at the same time, you know, a lot of his stuff has kind of broken through and become very much cult classic stuff. Is this kind of easy to get into, or is it a bit of a, if you like it, you like it, if you don't, you won't?
Exactly. It's either your kind of thing or it's not. It's you're never going to be two ways about this kind of comedy. I mean, a lot of people will, I think, find it impenetrable and dull.
Mm.
There is certainly a very strong degree of social commentary underpinning the whole thing about, you know, the idea of stupid rich people being demanding and that sort of thing. And, you know, sort of, I guess also people who are running the show whose main job is to appear competent, whilst actually having no technical ability at all. And the people who are actually running the show are not visible. They're underground, if you will. They are out of sight and out of mind.
Okay. The way you say that, does it kind of cut to like people back at home base kind of going, oh, fuck, we've lost the ship. It's 3 years off course. We need to reprogram it or something? Or is it just...
There is certainly cutting between the home base, the mission control on Earth as well, which is also highly amusing. But there is actually a core of people on the ship who are essentially running the ship who don't... Nobody actually knows they're there. They're basically... Okay. If you they open a hatch in the bridge, a very shiny... high-tech looking bridge, which actually does nothing.
Okay.
And you go down the ladder in the hatch, and there's this really sort of seedy locker room. It looks like something out of Red Dwarf. and that's where the actual people who are the skeleton crew required to run the ship actually work.
Okay.
So again, you can interpret that a few different ways, and to being, you know, like I said, you know, you've got people up front who essentially putting on the face of people who are competent and trained and calm and professional who actually don't do shit. They just talk a good game in a very fancy, shiny, high-tech bridge that does nothing. While the real work goes on downstairs. So, you know, maybe I'm reading too much and thinking there's a bit of social commentary. I don't think so. Andrew, who's joined in. Andrew, this is a podcast. I'm not filming this for my own health. I wouldn't put you all through that. This is a podcast. You can find us on Spotify under the Armchair Producers if you want to be bored. There are armies of Russian bots who listen every week, and they can't be wrong. That's Avenue 5. There is a season 2 coming, I believe. It was signed up for a second season after 4 episodes is what I've read.
Okay.
So I imagine it'll be a way off now unless they filmed it a long time ago, which I doubt because it only premiered, I think, this year. So I'd be surprised if we saw that anytime soon, considering pretty much all TV and film production is not happening.
Yeah. As a spin-off to that, it's going to be a really weird time in, like, depending on how long this really extends out and how extreme it gets, we're going to kind of run out of new TV, which is
really... Yeah, well, there's a lot of nostalgia stuff happening right now. I imagine people are rewatching Friends at a startling rate. I've been rewatching The West Wing for about the 472nd time.
It's so
Hello to Tony, who's watching on Facebook Live. We do this kind of weekly-ish. I always say we do it when we feel like it.
we are artists. To do weekly.
We are creatives. Don't expect, you know, don't expect too much of us.
The movie be in the correct house in order for us to record, and fortunately for everyone, all 4 people, the stars have aligned tonight.
The stars have a line. The moon is in the 7th circle of Jupiter. And, I don't believe in horoscopes. So I'm a Sagittarius. We're skeptical.
Very good.
The other one, I would recommend, just in case anyone's curious, I would strongly recommend Avenue 5 if you like very dry, sarcastic comedies. If you've seen any of his previous work, Veep, In the Loop, that kind of thing, Death of Stalin. If you haven't seen Death of Stalin, that's fucking great.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of thing, you're probably going to like this kind of thing. If you like The Office, I think it's kind of, you know, maybe Parks and Rec, that kind of thing. It's not quite the same sort of thing in the sense of a fake reality television show like those other series I mentioned were, but something like Veep particularly, it has that fake reality TV show style to it, but it's the same type of humor, very sly and underhanded and dry, and I think I like dry comedy, so it's it's not the kind of laugh out loud comedy.
Okay.
It's kind of like you sit there and go, yeah that's clever, I see what you're doing there, it's clever. I like that, but I don't know, too many loud sort of, you know, guffaws. If you stick to Jackass or
I feel like you need to go on a Jackass binge. That's the second reference just whilst talking to Avenue 5 about Jackass. I think you need to do.
It's in my head because I was talking to my friend Carolyn before the show, and we were trying to describe for old time listeners. We used to do a challenge mode on the show once upon a time, and that basically like Jackass for films, because we watched shit films, so you didn't have to.
And we watched some really shit films.
Really shit films. So it was like, it wasn't really a review show. It was really just like stunt film watching, if that's a thing. it's in my head a bit, but that's one of the weird shows that I tend to like. Anthony's asked about thoughts on Ozark. Have you seen Ozark?
I am curious about it, but I have a very love-hate relationship with Jason Bateman. So I feel like depending on how long the quarantine is going to go, I may go into it. But at the moment, I'm very much in an anime phase.
I haven't watched it. I sort of see it sitting there. And because it's on Netflix, and we haven't really talked about this, but one of the things that's come up lately is the Netflix Party browser app. You can watch Netflix with your friends. And I've been thinking about maybe watching Ozark with some of my friends because... it would actually be something I haven't seen, and it would be nice to sit down and watch something with people haven't seen before instead of just watching Rick and Morty for the 450th time. I did like The Outsider, which we talked about a few weeks ago, which had Jason Bateman in it.
That's right, yeah.
I think he actually also directed some of the episodes of The Outsider. So I can recommend The Outsider if you have Foxtel. Or you are not opposed to slightly less than legal means, which I would absolutely not endorse because that's illegal and that means it's wrong. and we wouldn't do that kind of thing around here.
Live.
I think I got away with it. Uncut Gems. I tried watching Uncut Gems the other night.
Oh, yeah. And this is the Adam Sandler one, yeah?
Sorry?
This is Adam Sandler's new one?
This is the new Adam Sandler Netflix film, I guess. Yeah. And the fact, as I said, the fact that I prefaced it with I tried watching it probably does give you a head start as to where I landed on this one, if you're curious. So Uncut Gems, Adam Sandler, with his debts mounting and angry collectors closing in, a fast-talking New York City jeweler risks everything in hope of staying afloat and alive. God.
Is this a comedy?
No.
Okay.
No, not a comedy. Crime, drama, thriller, says IMDb.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of Sandler. I never have been. I never thought he was funny. I guess you'd have to go so far as to say that some of his work is acknowledged as modern comedy classics or maybe Happy Gilmore, something like that. I know Wedding Singer is very popular with people. I never got it. Happy Gilmore's okay. The rest of it, I just never got it. It didn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. But, and also, I guess, as an actor for me, Sandler plays the same character in every film he's ever made. Sort of a weird, you know, stunted man child with anger problems.
Yeah. Even in his more serious roles.
Even in his more serious roles. And that's what I was just about to say. But the sole Adam Sandler film I've seen and enjoyed was Punch Drunk Love, which I've probably talked about in previous podcasts. But that's the only one that I seem to like. And that's also the film that probably most Adam Sandler fans don't like because they probably picked up a ticket to the movie or hired the DVD and thought, what the fuck is this? Yeah. It's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, which is not your standard run-of-the-mill director.
No.
You know, There Will Be Blood, Boogie Nights, that kind of thing. Magnolia, was that him as well? But anyway.
Just having a look now.
It's probably not what we're talking about, but Punch Drunk Love, he plays the same kind of stunted man-child with anger problems. But what's interesting is that, again, the scripts from Paul Thomas Anderson as well, he kind of spun that character in a very interesting new direction for me, being sort of a dark, sort of, you know, depressing, sad character, not for laughs, so for almost at times menace.
And the way that it was filmed with the odd kind of real darks and pastels, it was almost like the whole world was kind of just a little off skew. And so he kind of fit into it a little bit better.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
And you had the late Philip Seymour Hoffman playing an incredible role as the mattress man. And he was incredible in that film. It was a great film for me. And I remember I love that movie. Yeah. That's the only Sandler film I've ever enjoyed. I'm going a long way around. I'll get there, people. You'll get used to this if you listen to this shit. So I think he's trying to do something similar here.
Okay.
I hate this movie. I made it about an hour and 10 minutes into it.
Okay.
And I did that thing where you get the remote and you flick it and you go, how long has this shit got left to go? It was 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So I probably would have stuck it out. I wasn't halfway through yet. It's a long movie. So I was like, at that point, I think I might... 135 minutes, so it's over 2 hours long.
Yeah.
The story in no way requires the film that long. At that point, I just backed out and said, yeah, no, I'm not down with this. This is enough of this shit for me. So why did I dislike it? G'day to Steve and Terrence, who looks like, oh, we're back up to six. That's probably more listeners we've ever had.
Good God. Hello, everyone.
I am not adverse to profanity. I think regular listeners might be familiar with. I grew up in Geelong, where the word fuck is punctuation. you don't use one every sentence, you're looked on with deep suspicion. But the torrent of profanity in this film was truly remarkable. It's like they sort of set out to, break the record from whatever it was, Scarface, or was it South Park that owns a record now? And it was almost, overwhelming profanity in this film. I think Sandler, I guess, is doing his shtick as well as he's ever done it. I think he kind of phones it in sometimes, but I just couldn't stand his character. I just couldn't give a shit what happened to him or his wife or his... He's basically a jeweler who owes everybody money, and he kind of has to keep a whole bunch of plates spinning to get out of a, giant shithole of debt that he's managed to dig himself into. And there are gangsters and stuff after him, and he gets beaten up and locked in a car boot naked and all sorts of things like that. But this, I guess, for me, I feel like for a film about someone like that I should, relate to the fast-talking jeweler who's in debt and trying to escape. I should be caring about his journey. I should care about whether he gets murdered or not. Yeah. You don't want him to get murdered. You should be the hero or the protagonist, if you will, of the story, and you should want him to follow his story. I couldn't stand him. His wife was just as awful. I think it was Idina Menzel from Frozen. He might have played her. If I'm not mistaken, yes. I think that's the actress.
Correct. Yep.
And the same time, they were horrible people doing stupid shit they shouldn't be doing. And I was like, no, I don't care. I don't care. Just shoot the guy in the head. I don't care. We'll probably at least cut my misery short. Things would happen, and you take your eye off the screen for 30 seconds, which was certainly easy enough to do because I wasn't engaged. And all of a sudden, he's somewhere else, and there's a new celebrity popping up in the film. There are a lot of celebrities in the film.
Okay.
I might consider Idina Menzel as one of them because she's not much of an actress. I didn't actually check to see if it was him, but I believe Kevin Garnett was, let me just have a check and see if it's actually him. It is Kevin Garnett. If you don't know who that is, he's a basketball player, a very famous basketball player. He plays himself, which was a stretch, I'm sure. there were rappers in it who may well have been famous rappers, but you know how I feel about rap. I am all about rap music, so I'm what's popular these days.
One day you'll have to show off your tattoos.
So maybe one day I'll just do a freestyle battle. That'll just be a show. that's something to look forward to. Four people who are watching on Facebook Live, you can tune in and see a freestyle battle. that'll be next week, maybe. It's difficult to sort of go into great detail about this. I just hated everything about it. I hated the characters, hated the writing, I hated the dialogue. The villains were, it's like something out of, if there's a book somewhere out there about how to write gangster villains, these guys are straight out of that book.
Okay. This movie got a lot of recognition.
7.5 on IMDb. It has a 90 on Metacritic.
Yeah, I remember people saying, oh, this should have been in the Oscars contention and things like that. But from the trailer that I remember watching, it didn't look like it was that kind of caliber, and doesn't sound like it engaged with you at all.
Well, the second part I can say absolutely it didn't engage with me at all, I won't be going back to see the second half. But look, I mean I'm fussy, I guess. I don't like Sandler. That doesn't help the story. I know, for example, Shay won't go see things that have Tom Cruise in it. if there's somebody in it who you already are not a fan of, it probably does put you behind the eight ball.
That's
just
true.
Quickly, Anthony's asked, have we seen The Gentleman? Have you seen The Gentleman?
No, because I'm not a fan of Guy Ritchie movies.
And that just backs up my point. So maybe I haven't seen
it. I think that he's been making basically the same movie for years, with the exception of kind of the Sherlock Holmes movies, although there are still similarities because it's like, oh, English gentleman?
You like Sticking Arthur movie, right?
Huh? Yeah. Which I actually kind of enjoyed. It shouldn't have been, they shouldn't have tried to actually make it a King Arthur movie. They should have just done a fantasy movie. But as he said in his Joe Rogan interview, if it isn't part of a known franchise, Hollywood doesn't fucking want to touch it. So I can understand why he did it, but I think it actually hampered the product in the end.
I didn't like King Arthur because I thought it was kind of crazy, but they were talking like, you know, the characters out of Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, it was Lock, Stock in the past, which, you know, that's kind of entertaining, but at the same time, he's been doing that since the mid-90s. He hasn't shown any real evolution.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, if you're still there online, Anthony, tell us what you thought of Gentleman and should we watch it? I'm not opposed to Guy Ritchie, considering I'm still watching Kevin Smith films and he's been doing the same thing that the whole time. So, you know, if you're into a good thing, keep doing it.
Did a little bit of a look at, because Adam Sandler was one of the first big celebrities to cut a major deal with Netflix for original content and stuff. And I just looked back at certainly the ones that I know for sure are Netflix exclusive films. He started off with The Ridiculous Six, which was just insultingly bad and socially incorrect in so many ways. He then went on to do The Do-Over, then Sandy Wexler, Murder Mystery with Jennifer Aniston, and now Uncut Gems is his serious piece, I guess. So they're definitely movies when you kind of just look at them, you look at the trailers, you watch 10 minutes of it, you go, oh, okay, this is definitely an Adam Sandler movie. They're doing nothing different. This was a deal between Netflix and Sandler, knowing Adam Sandler has a core fan base that will watch these movies and cover the costs, I think. So
I think I remember reading the Ridiculous Six. Is that the one he did? The Western one.
Yeah.
It was one of the most watched Netflix properties or things on Netflix for that year.
Yeah.
So they'll only be the ones to know whether it's worked out, because, you know, they don't ever release that kind of data. But
no, but
you know, I'm not opposed to that kind of thing, in the sense that obviously he's a very, very popular actor. Lots of people go out of their way to see his films. I'm not representative of a wider community of people who enjoy his work.
Yeah.
Having to say, but this one was a miss for me, and it's yet another occasion where you've kind of seen the reaction of the critics and you've gone, what the fuck? Like, I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
But if I can slide sideways onto something else where I think I'm actually on side for critics for a change.
Yeah.
I'm surprisingly on side for critics for a change, is Watchmen.
Oh, the series, yeah?
The series, Watchmen. So I think we've touched on it a little bit over the last few weeks. Anthony's asking when we're on next and can we watch The Gentleman in Review. I will stand by and I will check out the Gentleman just for you next week. And I'll challenge my co-host to do the same. I can't force him to do it because he doesn't like Guy Ritchie, but we'll check it out. I just signed up for Foxtel, actually, like I said earlier on in the show, but I am finding it once I sort of chew through probably Watchmen. I'm not sure if there's a whole lot else left there on there, left on the actual platform for me to enjoy. There's not a lot of new films or TV being released right now. So it's questionable for $50, $60 a month about whether it's worth it. Especially even if you are just working at home, I am, you should actually be like me trying to work. I will check out the Gentleman. That'll one to look forward to next week. When are we on next? We'll try and do it next Wednesday. Can we commit to next Wednesday?
Let's commit.
Have you still got that dinner with the governor? Or has that got moved?
That got postponed, you know, the way things always do. It's like,
you've got such a busy social calendar these days.
Well,
you have to.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's wanted me here, there, and everywhere. They wanted to fly me over to Aruba. It was,
You don't want to spread yourself too thin.
No, no.
So I think we'll try and aim to be online about the same time next week.
Yeah.
Around about the same time. Keep an eye out for that. If you want to download previous episodes, check out Spotify. We're doing it a bit different. People who are listening to the podcast at home, the reason why I'm constantly talking because we have Facebook Live going every now and again. Somebody I know pops on, and hello to anybody who's choosing to watch. Hello to Stanley, who agrees she can't, Tracy, sorry, who says she can't stand Adam Sandler. So this is a bit of a new format. We're trying new stuff. Yeah. You know, if it's weird, then I'm sorry. Watchmen.
Yeah.
Watchmen.
This has got a lot of praise.
This has got an 8.1 on IMDb. So it's got very high praise. It is created by Damon Lindelof, which is a bit of a red flag. It's a bit like Mayday in a red square right there if you see his name on something, because Damon Lindelof, for those who don't know, was a writer on Lost. He was a writer on some of the Abrams Star Trek films. He was a writer of The Leftovers, which I think you were partial to, The Leftovers.
I quite liked it, yeah. Certainly enjoyed the first season.
I watched a bit of it. I couldn't get into it, but I might see if that's on Fox, so it might be a good time to try and get through a little bit more of it. They filmed that in Melbourne, I think. It's one of the seasons. The Watchmen is set in an alternate history where mass vigilantes are treated as outlaws. Watchmen embraces the nostalgia of the original groundbreaking graphic novel of the same name while attempting to break new ground of its own. Talk about fucking ambitious.
Yep.
I mean, the 2008 film, I think it was 2008, was, of course, directed by the one, the only, Zack Snyder. Don't mention Batman versus Superman. Martha Snyder. and I think you and I are in concert that we are fans of the Snyder film. We are, of course, a human, which means we are, of course, fans of the book, the graphic novel.
And I think we both agreed, actually, that the movie improved on the ending compared to the book.
In a way, yeah. I mean, it kind of, I think the ending was, I mean, a lot of people who are very familiar with the book had problems with that. Mm. I liked it. I really thought he did about as well as anybody could possibly expect to do with the translating the book into the film. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah.
An incredible effort from Snyder, and hence, that makes it just more, that much more disappointing when you see what he's done since. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole. The film was, I think it could be argued a failure. A lot of people didn't get it.
Yep.
If you probably didn't read the book, I guess maybe you could be forgiven, but like, it, you know, I think I remember a lot of people going, they're not even real superheroes. Like,
yeah,
you know, sort of,
I think it kind of came out at the wrong time when it was, this was 2009, so you're looking at around about the birth of the MCU, so people were starting to get this new taste, and the MCU was very different to what DC had been doing with Chris Nolan's Batman trilogy, and then this comes out and it's sort of like, oh, it's taking itself seriously, so it's like Batman, but wait, these are they just normal people? Oh, wait, what? One person has legitimate superpowers? Okay. It was in a weird kind of state of flux for superhero movies in Hollywood. Plus the fact that it's, you know, when you do alternate history, it's always hard to sell that to the mass audience, I think. And then throw in superheroes that aren't necessarily superpowered superheroes, that's a big matzo ball for people to take on.
It's a chunky piece of storytelling.
Yeah,
it's not your traditional comic book movie in the sense that I think anybody who says to you comic books aren't they for children should be forced to sit down and read the Watchmen graphic novel and then come back to me later and tell me it's for children.
Because
it is not for children. It was actually, I think, voted one of the 50 must-read books of the 20th century by Time magazine.
Which is
favorite stat. It's like the, you know, if you're going to start, I mean, I think it was great, and sort of stop going on about the book and the tech, But if you're going to start somewhere on graphic novels, which I kind of did with Alan Moore, who was the author of Watchmen, it's actually fairly accessible.
Yeah.
Is there something, compared to, say, something like Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I've also really takes some concentration and some work. This is a lot more accessible than something like that. And I am not a graphic novel reader, as you know. I'm not a regular consumer of that kind of product, but this is something you can actually pick up and read. The TV show kind of sort of acknowledges what happened in the film, but not so.
Is it set in the same universe then, or what?
No, it's not in the set in the same universe. Sorry, I'll take that back. Anthony says he's going to listen in next week. Fantastic. We will talk, gentlemen, next week. It's set in the same universe as the book, not the film. Okay. So those who've read the book, spoilers, people, on Facebook and on the podcast. If you don't want to know what happens at the end of the book, you can tune out now. Ozymandias organizes to drop a giant squid on New York City, kills millions of people in an effort to avoid nuclear war, which is such an interesting, complex story. And the idea was that he drops this, what is supposed to be an interdimensional monster, on New York, in the understanding that that will then unite humanity against an external threat.
Yeah.
Been a long time. Please stop me if I get it wrong. That was my memory of it.
No.
But that's essentially where this picks up. The TV show is set in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is an interesting place to set a show. Yeah. You know, usually LA or something. And it's sort of set around the Tulsa Police Department, where a white supremacist group called the Seventh Cavalry has taken arms against the police department because of perceived racial injustices, causing the police to conceal their identities with masks to prevent the 7th Cavalry from targeting them in their homes following the White Knight. The police, as a rule, wear yellow bandanas to cover their face. Mm-hmm. But in amongst the police, you have a number of genuine, shall we say, masked vigilantes. Okay. I would not necessarily say superheroes, because they seem to have very limited superpowers. Gotcha. But they are more like the Watchmen style vigilantes who aren't necessarily powered, but they, you know, maybe have access to technology or something of that nature.
Okay.
The main sort of story arc follows a detective known as Sister Knight, as she investigates the murder of her friend and superior, Judd Crawford, who's played by Don Johnson, who is really having a real career renaissance after Knives Out and now this. She discovers secrets regarding the situations and around vigilantism. I'll keep it fairly open-ended because it is worth watching, as I'm sort of saying. It's some interesting stuff going on. Jeremy Irons is in this series as well. Jeremy Irons plays Ozymandias.
Smartest man on the planet.
The smartest man on the planet. And there's some weird fucking scenes with him. I won't say where he is, but he's somewhere different. some fucking weird shit going on with Jeremy Irons' character, and you'd be quite well forgiven for going. The number of times I was sitting there with a confused face on, this is the confused face, going, what the hell am I watching? What's going on? And it's very well paced. It's incredibly well written. Which is surprising, again, for anything involving Damon Lindelof. And I will wave my fanboy flag and tip my fanboy hat here at this point and say the music is by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
God, such a fanboy.
Which it's actually quite a get if you think about it for a second. Like, it's a TV show and you've got an Academy Award-winning composer. And multiple Academy Award nominated composer and international rock star composing your TV show. I don't know what it is. It's just something about his work. And I guess I'm not bullshitting here, because like, I don't normally notice the music in film or TV at all, really. unless it's Hans Zimmer, because he's awesome. But be a number of times I'll be actually watching an episode of A Watchman, and I'll actually go, geez, this music's good. Oh, that's right, Trent Reznor did it. And I've forgotten, but like it reeks of him. You know, he's get the point now where he's done so many TV shows and movies that, you know how you can kind of go occasionally, you watch a movie and go, did Danny Elfman do the music for this?
Yeah,
it's Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Randy Newman did this one, didn't he? Oh, that's Randy Newman. You know, it's just so, so...
Yeah, there's certain riffs that they use. John Williams is famous for it, yeah.
And Trent's now like that as well. A couple of times, like I watched some of this when I was on my cruise earlier in the year. Speaking of cruises, didn't I dodge a fucking bullet there? I watched a few episodes on the boat, and I kind of didn't watch it until the last couple of weeks when I got Foxtel sorted out of my house. And I'd completely forgotten that Trent had done the music here. And then, like, you're watching an episode and halfway through, there's like such a recognizable little tweet riff or sound that he will use. And you'll be like, this sounds like, oh, that's right. It's Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross. So, but they are, of course, Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross are Nine Inch Nails, who are probably my favorite rock band of all time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that with a grain of salt, I think the music really, really helps set the mood here. Because it's got a very weird, otherworldly vibe to the whole thing. Like, it just doesn't, it sort of looks like the real world. It kind of feels like the real world, but it's not quite.
Okay. Right?
It's just little bits and pieces scattered throughout the world. And I think that's really well done for alternative history. You want it to look like a lot like the 80s, but just have enough that's different in there to go, something very different happened in this universe that really set it off. So there's a scene where someone actually calls Dr. Manhattan on Mars.
Okay.
I would say at this point in time, giant blue penis has not made an appearance, but I will continue to keep an eye out for it because it was George's favorite part of the movie.
No, it was not my favorite part of the movie. It was my favorite element of that story is that it was my brother's first experience with an IMAX movie, and all it got was giant blue cock.
It was his favorite part of the movie, Facebook fans, was the giant blue penis. He's, I don't know.
Everyone's got their kink. Don't kink shame me.
Exactly what. Your kink is not my kink. So, and that's it. I'm not criticizing you for it. I'm just saying you should come to be comfortable with who you are. It's okay. I'll be keeping an eye out for any frontal male nudity moving forward. I guess caveat here, I am six episodes into the 9 episodes, which make up the season. What the fuck's up with that? When did 9 episodes become a season? Get with it, writers.
Oh, please, shut up. Think of Sherlock, 3 episodes a season, but each one of those is feature length. So
that's 6 hours of TV. This is 9 hours, so it's a little bit better, but seriously, 9 episodes, I guess if that's all you've got to tell. The reason I'm giving that caveat is if there's one thing anybody who ever saw Lost knows is it's easy enough to start a season. Jeez, it's hard to bring it home.
That's true.
Season 1 and 2 of that show were fucking great, but like after that, it really went downhill.
Well, the ratings get higher as the episodes go on. The episode 8 has got a 9.5 on IMDb.
So, look, the ratings give me hope. I'm just going to say that people rated the last episode of Picard quite highly as well.
That's fair.
But, you know, you see anything that Abrams and those guys have ever done, they can't finish anything.
Yeah.
They can't finish a fucking sandwich. So, but so far, it's actually been a real breath of fresh air. They've done it in a really interesting way. They just didn't try and remake the movie. They didn't go, well, here's the story arc of somebody that happened after the movie. It's taking the book, the universe of a book, and gone. If you think about it, there's any number of amazing stories you could tell in that universe. That Alan Moore, who I think it's fair to say is a genius and one of the great writers of our time, he created an incredible universe. And I'm okay with people going, considering he's such a fucking snob, that he doesn't want to tell stories anymore because I'm so fucking high and mighty. I'm great for other writers to come along and go, I want to tell, this is a cool universe. I reckon I could tell a great story in that universe.
Yeah. No, I think that sort of thing is really, really encouraging. Totally agree with you. If you've got an interesting world, why not? And because they're not beholden to, oh, we are just literally retelling a lauded graphic novel story, we're not going to touch that because that's been told in a movie. They did as well as they could. There's no point in retelling that as a TV show. But the world that from that point on is fascinating. We can just do one season that's about that murder mystery. The next one is about political corruption, and it can go off in any direction that they want, or they can develop their own multi-season arc going forwards and into it without ever kind of turning around looking at what Alan Moore did and going, yeah, let's put a big old steam and poop on that. They're just using it as a launching point, which is great. I'm okay with that.
I don't think there's going to be a season two. I've got an article here from last month from Lindelof saying he's out and he's not interested in the season two. So I believe it was a big hit for HBO in the States.
Yep.
I mean, it's such an interesting time for the industry as a whole. Man. Who knows what's going to happen moving forward? I guess there's, you know, obviously there's going to be anything anytime soon. But if there is, it doesn't look like Mr. Lindelof's going to be involved. But I'm a bit like you just said, I'm happy with one season and out. Because at least I haven't finished it yet, but it's good. It's good stuff. And I would hate to see them just try and stretch it into something. If he doesn't, so basically said he doesn't have any ideas.
Yeah.
That's kind of refreshing to go, well, he's somebody, I mean, like I said, I've had problems with his work in the past, but it's nice to see someone who's got that kind of creative honesty to go, I just don't think I have a story to tell after this season.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing I'm going to stick.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you look at sort of like some of the episodic shows like The Flash or Arrow, that sort of thing, where they have a 22 or 23 episode season. And it's like, okay, we can actually probably cut about half of that away because most of it is filler and not really doing anything to develop the characters beyond a little bit of comic relief or romantic injection or anything like that. And I would rather someone go, you know what? All I need is 9 episodes to tell the story that I want to tell. And, you know, we talked about it with Picard, how they kept cutting down the episodes during development of it. So like, I think it's very clear that they needed more episodes to do it. And they kind of truncated themselves and cut away so much that it actually ended up hindering the product. So production studios need to just give the creative team the amount of episodes that they need to tell the story and not go, oh yeah, this is really good. We're selling this as a 22 episode season. And then the writers go, oh shit, we need to come up with another 8 episodes, but we've already got the story mapped out. Let's inject.
Check it, clip show. We need a clip show. Tracy's saying, get out while the going is good. Be remembered for the good stuff.
Yeah.
Or killer, no filler. That's what we want here. And I think you can kind of split them into two classes here. You can kind of go, there's the prestige series, which I think Watchmen, anything on HBO, I think Clark can be classed as a prestige series. And, you know, I mean, I'm a bit frustrated because I would like more than 9 episodes a season. But, you know, if that's all you've got to tell a really tight, great story in 9 episodes, I'm comfortable with that. But then you've got the flip side, and that's, I guess, what you call in the States network television.
Yeah.
You know, you guess what we would call free-to-air TV, except that I don't think free-to-air TV in Australia shows anything. It's not reality TV anymore.
It's all imports from the US.
No, tell me. The two people who are watching on Facebook Live, if you watched anything on commercial TV recently, it's not a reality show, let me know. I'm obviously 9, 7, 10, SBS and ABC are a bit different. Yeah. But you're making, I mean, I'm thinking of shows like the Big Bang Theory. I don't even know how many episodes a year that has. 20, 30?
I probably had the standard 22. I'll have a quick look.
Yeah, that would be about right. So Yutini Chu, 23 episodes a season. And they just said it's really almost like a factory production line. Like they just churn that shit out.
Well, they buy this sort of stuff well in advance, and the programmers, they've obviously got a timetable that's like, okay, we're showing content from this time to this time. We need to know what we're doing for the next 3 months. So, you know, if you've got a show that is 22 minutes long, which is your kind of standard episode of a comedy show, then it's like, okay, we need to order 22 episodes of that to get us through to the next season when the next round of new shows.
Have a little more TV hours to fill, right? Like, yeah. Hello to Noha, who's watching. I hope you're surviving the apocalypse well. My apocalypse is going well. How's your apocalypse going, George?
My apocalypse is like an extended stay in no man's land where I can't really do anything. And as a contrarian, being told to stay away from everyone, I've never wanted to give more people more hugs.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a bit like this episode of Black Mirror sucks, okay? you know, anyone who's just we're back to two, so I'm not going to announce what the show is again. But yeah, jumping the shark. I think shows that jump the shark a lot earlier if you're trying to pump out 22 episodes a season, because there's only so much good writing. I mean, you go back and see a show like Seinfeld, which is, you know, fanboy hat on, is great. Or even a show like Friends, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I think the quality of something like that stuck together pretty good over a long, long period of time and a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe where the real genius in those sort of shows are. But, or a show like The West Wing as well, because they had like 20 episodes a season.
Yeah.
And there's not very many. Or occasionally it was a clip episode where they just like flashbacks to stuff that happened a few years ago, and you're like, no, I'll skip that one.
Yeah.
But if you can actually sort of do 20 episodes a season and actually make him like mostly killer, then, you know, you're doing pretty well, and it's a pretty impressive effort.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the turnaround of production of those kinds of things is really quick too. So, you know, the stuff like HBO and Netflix, the way that they film those is not the same way that network television does them. Network television does a quick turnaround, not anywhere near the speed of something like South Park, for example, but it is very, very quick. Whereas HBO and the prestige Amazon Prime and Hulu and Netflix stuff, it's filmed more as a holistic production, and they'll kind of go, all right, we've got so-and-so for all this time. We're going to film this, 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 and this, and we're just going to have a big 3-month filming session, get everything we need done. Whereas some shows, particularly a lot of the WB stuff, it seems, is kind of half, by the time the season is airing on TV, they're getting to like the end of the second third of filming, and there's a close proximity to it. It's much quicker than movies or any kind of particularly animation, which takes a lot longer as well. So it's respect for anyone who develops a TV show, because the turnaround is crazy, the pressure is nuts. But at the same time, it sucks when you are having added pressure saying, okay, you need to add extra episodes. Like, but I'm telling the story I want in 10 episodes. Just let me have 10 episodes.
We got a quick question here. What current show do you feel is in danger of jumping the shark?
Ooh.
I would go so far as to say, I think we're contrarians on this show for three people who are at Facebook Live or the Russian bots who are listening. And that there's a lot of stuff that people are supposed to like that we don't like.
Yeah.
Or one of us doesn't like anyway. there's stuff I don't like that, you know, End of the Fucking World, everyone was supposed to think that was amazing. The End of the Fucking World was so good. I didn't get it. That's another one. Like, and one that's got very highly rated, and maybe this is one that nobody's got around to watching yet, but High Fidelity. So this is a TV show based on the Nick Hornby novel.
That's right.
Adapted into a film in 2000 with Jack Black and John Cusack. Great film. one of my favorite films. A friend of mine put me onto it. So I don't even know what TV station that's on in this country. I'm sorry. But it has very highly rated. I say that thing has fucking jumped the shark from day one. But I guess it's probably not really in the spirit of a question. The spirit of a question, something that started out great, but maybe isn't keeping up with what it has done in the past. And in that world, and you're going to disagree with me in this one, George, and I would say that is Westworld. In the sense, it got way too smart, way too fast in the second season, got way ahead of itself. And I think it did itself, its amazing reputation, a lot of damage in season two. I haven't watched season three. So yeah.
I would actually kind of agree with that. I still personally enjoy it, but I think you're right. I think they dove into a very, very narrow viewpoint of kind of what sort of storytelling they want to do. And they do it really well, but it's not accessible at all to anyone who, like, the vast majority of the first season was really smart and really good action. And it was every piston was firing on. It was amazing. And this one, they kind of went, okay, right, we're slowing down on this and that. We're taking a microscopic look at a certain particular type of programming, essentially. And they're like, okay, you're doing...
That's what people want. They want microscopic looks at programming. That's so hot right now.
Mm.
Well, we should move on a little bit from the audience.
I actually have another one, though. The one that generally got pretty good reviews in season one was Altered Carbon, and I think season two is trash.
Yeah, you reviewed this a couple of weeks ago. You were not a fan.
No, I thought it was so disappointing, so lackluster, absolutely jumped the shark, using so many old, tired tropes of storytelling, particularly with how the big bad villain develops over the season. I've spent a lot of time watching a lot of anime this last week or so, and there's a lot of kind of tropes of that fan service. That's what they classify it as in anime, of fan service, in the latest season of Altered Carbon. And it's like, yeah, it is literally just that. It's not actually good TV. It's just fan service, which is, you know, it some people will love it, but I think it's actually detrimental to what the world building that they had in season one was great. I think that they had too many episodes. They didn't need as many episodes, going back to what we were talking about before. But overall, I think it was a well-produced thing. My other concern is Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's getting a long tooth.
I loved the first season. I really liked the second season and loved how, even just with one episode, they spent one episode kind of building the world out beyond Hawkins. And season three did a very good job overall, but it was a little muddled. I'm concerned how much petrol is still in the tank if they're, you know, they released the teaser where, spoilers for anyone who didn't see it, Hopper is in some kind of Russian prison servitude thing or something. It's like, okay, this is growing very quickly outside of Hawkins. I don't know if I want that.
Yeah, the small children will be elite Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Breaking him out of jail. So that'll be something to look forward to. And that idea is for sale, people. We'll write it. We'll do it. We'll act it. We'll direct it.
I will do it with finger puppets.
Stop going animation, people. It's the future. We've been talking a little about anime. What have you seen in anime world this week?
So I decided to get a trial session with Anime Lab. And yes, I am absolutely one of those godless heathens that actually does like listening to dubbed stuff, because when it's dubbed well, it is great. If it's a shit dubbing, that's not the fault of the film or the fact that it is dubbed. It is poor talent and poor casting direction. However, Anime Lab and Crunchyroll and a number of the platforms have invested a lot of time and energy into doing good quality voice acting, getting proper voice actors, not actors who want to be in a Studio Ghibli movie or anything like that. They're actual professional voice actors who know how to correctly translate the emotion of the original manga into English. And I went back and I'm rewatching one of my favorites, which is Fairy Tale. It is based in a world with wizards. And it's a lot of fan service, like I was saying before. So kind of over the top crying and nosebleeds when they see someone naked and that sort of stuff. But it's actually a really good, genuine, heartfelt story.
How old is Fairy Tale?
Huh?
How old is it?
That finished up, I think, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, something like that. 320 odd episodes. So it went for a while. But it's really enjoyable, but it is another one of those shows where they, much like a lot of manga, that it goes on for a long time and there's a lot of what can be quite annoying. Halfway through a fight sequence, the two people are kind of facing off and they're kind of breathing heavily, and then it'll suddenly zoom in on one of their eyes and you'll have this whole 2 or 3 episode arc backstory about why they chose to become a good guy or why they chose to become a bad guy. And it's like, okay, just get back to the fucking fight. The fight was cool. So there's a lot of filler, but it is kind of, it's all character focused, but it really does kind of give a bit of a juxta, a juddering pace to the season and fills it out a lot. But at the same time, it's fun. And each episode is 20 minutes or whatever. So like, yeah, I can manage that.
It's bite-sized.
Yeah. The other two that are far newer, especially My Hero Academia has been getting a lot of love online. It's about a young boy who's in a world where on average 80% of people born in this world have got some kind of superpower, or as they call it, a quirk, and it can be anything. It's like there's some people that can control water, some people that can control gravity. It's all over the place. And this young boy, he desperately wants to be a hero, but he is in one of in the percentage where he hasn't got a native quirk, but he inherits one through the greatest superhero of the age, All Might. And he joins effectively a high school for training them how to become superheroes so that they can take on supervillains and things like that. And it's very enjoyable. It's very, very typical young idealistic protagonist, goes to a school to specialize in what they have always wanted ever since they were a little tiny baby, and hijinks ensue, and the big bad villain slowly but surely gets revealed over the course of 1,000 episodes. It's really enjoyable, but again, I don't think it's actually doing anything new. What is quite nice is how they are utilizing some of the unique superpowers and things like that, and how they develop them. The way that these kids are taught how to control their powers and stuff is actually really honest and surprisingly believable for what a young teenager with all of the hormones of growing up and the discovery of their sexual identity and things like that, as well as having these superpowers, is kind of, yeah, I could actually kind of relate to this a lot, even though I don't have any superpowers, despite my best efforts. And it's actually quite honest and heartfelt in that way, which is really nice, quite refreshing.
Don't have any superpowers?
No, unfortunately. I can talk bullshit for years, but I don't think that's a superpower.
You read a book, that's kind of a superpower.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, a lot of people write books, whether or not they're good is a different matter.
Dan Brown.
The other two that I want to quickly touch on, one is called Mob Psycho 100. And it's about this young boy who there's, again, a small percentage of the world that are gifted with these incredible abilities. And Mob is nicknamed Mob because he just blends into the background all the time. But he is like the most powerful. I can't remember what they actually refer to them as in the show, but he's like so heartfelt and sweet and innocent and lovely and completely oblivious to everything. And he keeps on kind of drifting around. He's partnered up with a con artist who's selling his services as a ghost exorcist because Mob is able to actually see spirits and exorcise them from the plane. It's very funny. It's very heartfelt. And the development of all the characters is great. And it's only, it's radically shorter than any other anime that's out there, I think, really. It's, I think, maybe 24 episodes altogether. It's really good. But the last one that I actually want to spend any time on, it's really weird. It's a very cool idea. It's called Dr. Stone. And the episode starts off...
It's a manga, and it's really fucking weird. You're blowing my mind here.
No, in its premise, because it's not really weird as in, so like, oh, it's a squid girl fucking a giraffe or something like that. It's just a really unusual, brilliant concept. Starts off kind of present day, so to speak, and it's... in a high school, one guy runs in and he expresses to his best friend that he's going to reveal how much he loves this girl. And he sort of runs off, and then suddenly you see these like a green glittery mist just engulf the spread across the earth, and everyone is petrified and becomes stone. And then you see time just tick by. Hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years into the future. And then eventually this guy who is running off to talk to his girlfriend manages to somehow break out of this cocoon, and he wakes up in this world, and he's naked. There's just the world is completely lush and green, and all civilization has just crumbled. He manages to, sort of like, with basic navigation, sort of like, oh, there was a river there, I'm going to follow that. He manages to find where he had arranged to meet this girl. When he gets there, he sees that she's turned to stone, and next to her in the tree is a note saying something along the lines of, hurry up, you dolt, meet me over here in this location. And then he goes, his best friend, who is this incredibly brilliant scientist, has been active in the world for about 6 months, and he is using science to bring back society. And it's a really weird, cool concept. The idea is like, what if someone who understood how to create fire and how to cultivate weapons and gunpowder and all of these modern civilization tools was suddenly transplanted to a point where you're effectively in the Stone Age? How quickly would modern society return? It's a really cool idea. I'm only a couple of episodes in, but so far it's okay. This is
so what was the name of it again?
It's called Dr. Stone.
And you're watching it via?
That is on Anime Lab. And you can watch it. I believe you can watch this for free, at least a few episodes of it for free without having to subscribe permanently, but you do have to watch some adverts.
Well, heaven forbid.
No.
I've just been playing around with Facebook filters. Excuse me here, people. I'm sorry about that. That was fun.
So that's been my excursion into anime for sure. All available on Anime Lab.
Anime Lab, is this an app on your phone?
It's an app on a phone. You can do it on your computer. It's got, I believe that on PlayStation and Xbox, there are apps to do it as well. You can link your accounts. So you can sort of like be watching on the big screen. And then if you want to watch on your tablet or on your iPad in bed, you can flick over and the episode will carry on just like Netflix does or Amazon Prime or any of those ones. So it's a good little service. And there's a lot of content on there, a lot. And they've got movies, they've got...
Another season of One Punch Man. I used to like One Punch Man.
Yeah, they've got One Punch Man on there. It's there's only, I think, two seasons on there. The first season has been dubbed. The second season is sub only. They've got all of Death Note. They've got Fairy Tail. They've got the newer seasons of One Piece, Full Metal Alchemist. They've got some of the anime live action adaptations, like the good Death Note movies that came out. They're on there as well. There's a lot to watch. At the moment, they've got Akira. It's good. It's a very good service.
If you like anime, Anime Lab sounds like worth the investment.
Yeah, because you've got the subs and the dub option, which unlike Crunchyroll, which only...
You're thinking about that, right?
Yeah. The other two things that I want to quickly touch on, live action shows that I've been watching, and one of them is far more, is actually still running as well. So I rewatched The Night Manager with Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie, right. And it's still fucking brilliant. And
how did you get a hold of that one?
That was on Amazon Prime Video.
Amazon Prime people, we're all streaming everything right now. So If you've got Amazon Prime, if you haven't watched The Night Manager, Tom Hiddleston, Hugh Laurie, it's great. I don't think Tom takes his shirt off, ladies, but you can't have everything.
The other thing that I'm watching on Prime Video is Absentia. So it's there seem to have been a bit of a glut of high concept sort of like thriller / detective serialized shows like Blind Spot. They had the big reveal of I think it was Jamie Alexander or someone who is found in Times Square in a big bag, and she's got tattoos all over her, and each one is
I watched that one.
Yeah. So that was all right. That one's one that jumped the shark as well.
Quickly.
Yeah. But Absentia, it starts off with Stania Katic, who some people would know from, she was the female lead in the Castle series with Nathan Fillion. She was also in the first season of Heroes. She was one of the heroes that could sort of like broadcast and manipulate digital telecommunications and stuff. She is kidnapped, and seemingly a few years jump by, and she's been listed. She works for the FBI. She's been listed as dead, and then suddenly an old case that she had been working on, a notorious suspected criminal, sends out a call to her ex-partner and former husband, saying, if you want to save her, go to this location. And they manage to find her. She's having difficulty remembering anything. She has these kind of flashbacks of masked faces and things. And the series just follows her re-acclimatizing to being back in the world after, I think it's about 6 years that she's been considered dead. Her child has grown up. Her husband has remarried, and she is pulled into a number of crimes where she's linked to a number of crimes that may have some connection to her disappearance as well. It's a really cool concept, but it takes too long. And again, that seems to be a subject of the show. There's a lot of filler. Stania Katic does a really good job. She goes through a lot physically and emotionally to deliver this role, which is good, but it's kind of missing a little something. I don't know what, the je ne sais quoi. There's not that kind of real engagement value, but I think it's on season 3 now, so whatever it was doing on the shows, apparently people like it enough to keep it going for a while. I watched all of season 1, and I don't know if I'm gonna go back for any more. Might do, because who knows how much free time I've got right now. But
it's company.
Yeah, so it's pretty good. At its best moments, it's really engaging and it grabs your attention and sort of like drags you along for a while. At its worst, you let it keep running and you go off and you make yourself a sandwich. And then you come back and nothing much has really changed. So, yeah.
It sounds like it's tolerable. And sorry, I might have missed it. What service is this one on?
That's on Amazon Prime Video as well. Yeah.
I am looking forward to, and we should try and watch it for next week, is Tales from the Loop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that has just come out.
Yeah. That's on Amazon Prime as well, isn't it?
Mistaken. That might be a reason to keep Amazon. Sorry, Amazon.
Well, it's only $5.
Sorry, Jeff. True. I mean, it's another one of those things. I like it when I sign up for Foxtel. I feel dirty. I don't want to be supporting fucking Murdoch, anything. But God damn it, I need stuff to flip through.
Well, you've also got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is now on Amazon Prime Video as well.
It's on Foxtel as well. And I did rewatch that actually last week.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a beautiful, beautiful movie, by the way. I won't go back into that one, but it's beautiful.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the only other thing that's really been taking up my time has been Nintendo had a good sale on a bunch of their first-party games, which is very, very rare. And a while ago, they partnered up with Ubisoft for Mario plus Rabbids as a strategy.
An XCOM style sort of turn-based combat game, isn't it?
Yes. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And they came out with some Donkey Kong DLC, which is his own little mini adventure. And it rectifies some of the problems that they had. Most notably, when you were going around in the core game, there's this little, it looks like a Roomba traveling vacuum cleaner kind of thing. And you are controlling that rather than Mario or any of the other characters in your party. And it just looked a little weird. In this one, they do this nice little hook around it where one of the Rabbids has taken on the appearance of Cranky Kong, the old Kong. And he hits it and it starts spinning and then he stops it like holding it up upright on its side and its bunny ears just flips down to the sides and he turns it into like a unicycle. So technically you're still controlling the same cursor point, but they've actually made it far more enjoyable to watch and easier to maneuver around because they put one of the characters literally riding it and it's very, very charming and funny. With Donkey Kong as well, his abilities give a lot more verticality to the game. He can pick up nearly anything on the battle board, including players and enemies, and travel with them. There's specific Donkey Kong pathways that can really move you around the board at amazing speeds. And it's not a huge expansion, but it does a lot right. And the core game itself looked pretty. It played really well. I would love them to make another one and just incorporate more of the Nintendo worlds. If they, you know, they've done Mario and they've done Donkey Kong, if they brought in like Zelda, that would be kind of fun. Just to see the slapstick style of the Rabbids with Zelda, the silent protagonist, it'd be unusual. And the way that they could incorporate some of Link's abilities and the way that the game plays, that'd be kind of cool. Or if they went like old school Link, like a Link to the Past or something like that, it'd be really, really fun. They just had made a really solid, enjoyable game. And with the sale, it's very, 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 very cheap. I think for the main game plus the DLC, I think you're going to put down maybe $35 for all of it. And that's a good amount of content.
Yeah. How many hours of gameplay you reckon you got out of it?
Just the DLC, I'd say I'm probably sitting on 8 to 10 hours. The core game, probably 30 to 40 hours, maybe.
It's a very decent amount of time for $35.
Yeah, so it's well worth it, money-wise. It is a quality game if you like that turn-based strategy game. As a side note, XCOM is coming to Switch, and I am so about that. I'm so looking forward to it.
I think there's a new XCOM game coming out very soon. I saw it advertised on Steam today.
Oh, nice. They're good games.
I didn't like the second one quite so much, but it's also a fucking time sink, that is. It's like, yeah. Do I have another 70 hours to see into XCOM? It's addictive. It's a great game.
Yeah.
And so any of the others that you've caught your eye are specials?
Well, most of the big ones.
Once you bought or ones you think are a good deal?
Well, most of their core games are actually got some kind of reduction on them. Witcher 3 is a really good port if you want a big, chunky RPG to play. That's reduced now, but you can probably still get it cheaper on other platforms. Breath of the Wild is reduced. I think all the Mario games are reduced. I can't remember, but it's ending soon if it hasn't already ended. But you will almost certainly find something worthwhile that is really cheap. So,
shout out to our good friends at Nintendo Australia.
Yes.
As per usual, we are for sale. And look, we're doing it for free.
No joke. The people at Nintendo Australia are fantastic. The two or three times that I've had to contact them for any issues with the account or whatever, they have been fantastic. Super helpful. Really appreciate their efforts. Thank you.
I haven't played my Nintendo Switch since I was on the plane on the way back from the United States last October, but I too would like to echo my thoughts that Nintendo are ace, and they would be more ace if they wanted to sponsor our show. And maybe give us some free shit we can talk about. I'd be open to that.
The last thing that I just want to quickly touch on, I think we're kind of both fans of Denis Villeneuve as a director.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I said we got some stuff from Dune, haven't we?
Yeah, we got the first screenshots of Dune, and it looks good. And in preparation for that, thank you very much, coronavirus, for fucking all of that up. I decided to go back and rewatch the Dune miniseries. And whoo! It's a really good story, but that's not a good adaptation.
Some would argue, you gotta wonder what drugs they were on in the 80s when they thought David Lynch.
I don't wonder what drugs, because the simple answer is all.
All, yeah, that's correct. I mean, look, you can like Lynch films, and I'm not necessarily a massive fan of Lynch's work, but I mean, the guy's an auteur.
Yeah.
And it's interesting shit. But I don't know who looked at like Eraserhead and thought, we should give him a studio science fiction picture.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking. I know a lot of people out there who still like the original Dune film. I'm not one of them. I sat through it once on a New Year's Day morning. Very, 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 very hungover. And maybe that influenced my opinion of it, but geez, it was hard to watch. What do you think of a film, the 84 film?
I like it, but it's hard to watch. And the older it gets, the harder it gets to watch. And it's interesting kind of watching who's in it. Like, you've got Patrick Stewart in there. You've got Sting randomly. It's kind of all over the shop, but it's actually kind of close to the Dune novels in its own weird way. And it's like, okay, then I can't really fault it. I can't say, oh, this is shit or that shit, because for the time, visually, it kind of looked quite good. And the actors all play their roles pretty well. But it's...
Yeah, it's certainly weird. If you wanted to make a weird fucking movie, David Lynch was the guy to hire.
Just looking at his career in the years before, he did 1977 was Eraserhead, 1980 Elephant Man, then 84 was Dune, and then he did Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. Yeah,
I'm not a fan, but I can appreciate his art. I'm not smart enough to get most of what he's doing. But I am not, what's the word? I'm not overly ambitious about the idea of we're going to get another Dune film, because it hasn't worked for the last two times we did it. But if anybody can make it work, it's Denis Villeneuve. And I think I was thinking to myself recently, actually, I was looking at some of his stuff to recommend to somebody else. But if you're talking filmmakers on a hot streak.
Oh, boy.
There's Chris Nolan and there's Denis Villeneuve. He hasn't put a foot wrong.
Yeah.
Because I recall... You and I went, I mean, 3 years ago now, we went and saw Blade Runner 2049. And I know I wasn't, I mean, I don't think we were particularly, what's the word, expecting a lot.
Mm.
you know, 25 years after the original, or more probably, or almost over 30 years since the original, and like where they're going to get much out of it.
Especially still having Harrison Ford in it, who has been phoning it in for years. It's like, okay. But
I know we walked out of that and we're like, wow, that was actually like really fucking good.
Yeah.
Like really good. Like I know no one went and saw it. Now it made a lot of money, but it was great.
Incidentally, it's now on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. So if you haven't seen Blade Runner 2049, check it out, I would say. But I guess if you haven't seen the original, you probably just set your expectations to low.
Yeah. Make sure if you do watch the original, watch the director's cut. The final cut, sorry. That's the one that's the best one. It's got... Yeah. But...
It's worth getting into that for 4 or 5. We'll be able to... 3 hours the first one, 3 hours the second one. It's 6 hours of entertainment, but make sure you... If you don't like your sci-fi weird, well, I mean, I don't know that I could recommend it. It's not your run of a... It's not Star Wars, right?
No, it is not Star Wars. It is not Star Trek. It is, I would say it's closer to season one style Game of Thrones in space and way more convoluted.
That sums it up. It's not an easy watch, but I think it's a rewarding watch if you can get through it.
Mm.
And if nothing else, Blade Runner 2049 looked amazing.
Oh, stunning. Stunning. I think visually it's going to look amazing. I think that's pretty much guaranteed.
Sometimes I just sit back and listen to the actual soundtrack. It's incredible. Yeah. But that's exciting. I am, as I sort of said, Denis Villeneuve, we're talking Arrival. We're talking, what was the last one he did? Blade Runner 2049, we just said.
Mm-hmm. Enemy.
Sicario, was that him?
Yes. Prisoners was really good.
And when we go back to Polytechnique, we see his French-Canadian film he made quite a while ago. If you haven't seen Polytechnique, if you can find it, I'd recommend it. It's good.
Yeah.
So he's done a hot streak, which bodes badly in some quarters, but he's got to fuck up eventually. But hey, Tarantino never really screwed the pooch. He's had some lower points, but, you know. It's never been tragically awful. He hasn't made a Heaven's Gate, he hasn't really, a Hudson Hawk, you know?
Yeah. Oh, don't you shit on Hudson Hawk. Hudson Hawk, fucking amazing.
We've got some beef in here. We're going to dissing Hudson Hawk. I think it's a pretty good little rounded picture. Have you been reading anything?
Reading? No, I've been writing my new book and doing rereading my first book because I need to make sure that everything actually makes sense and I don't kind of say, oh, so-and-so is 47 years old. And it's like in the first book, so-and-so is 36 years old. Like, but no, there's 20 years difference between the two. So I'm fact checking my own work.
Continuity matters.
Mm-hmm.
You did have a question from the audience earlier about reading. I am reading a book at the moment, an actual book, but it is very much a bogan read. It is not exactly high literature. And I am reading a book at the moment called 1989, The Great Grand Final. We don't normally talk sports on this show, but... this is a book all about the 1989 VFL Grand Final. It was the last year of VFL before it turned into the AFL, between Hawthorn and Geelong.
Yep.
And it is generally considered the greatest Grand Final ever played, or at least of a modern era. Hawthorn, of course, being Hawthorn, they won by a goal.
Take that, Gary.
Gary Ablett kicked 9 goals in a losing team, won a Norm Smith medal, one of the rare times that the Norm Smith medalist came from a losing team. Our international listeners are sitting there going, what the fuck? So this is a book written by an author named Tony Wilson, who I think is a journalist. Interestingly, Tony was actually on the Hawthorn list at the time.
Okay.
He was a young man who was actually... part of a Hawthorn football club in 1989. I don't remember him. He never played any senior football or anything. He wasn't in the grand final, but he was around the team.
Okay.
So he actually knows a lot of the people. Well, I guess to some degree, has some distant connections to the people who actually played in the game. So his perspective is an interesting one, as somebody who was 19, I think, at the time.
Okay.
And knew a lot of the people and was part of the organization. So the author talks a lot to the participants. I won't go too deep into the story because, well, if you know about the, if you know about the grand final, you probably know it. It's a very, very famous game. If you know, you're a Geelong, if you're not a Hawthorn supporter, I can't imagine you buying this book under any circumstances. It's probably going to be of limited interest. But he does have some interesting interviews with people in the game from both teams. The coach, the Geelong coach Malcolm Blight, no interviews with Alan Jeans, of course, unfortunately, because he passed away a number of years ago. But Malcolm, for the players who are still with us, many are interviewed for the book, and their thoughts and memories are appreciated. And Tony, being someone who was so close to the participants, writes really well about what it was like. And he really takes you behind the scenes into the inner sanctum a little bit and gives you a lot more context about what was going on with the players at the time. I'm actually learning things from reading the book.
Okay.
Which I didn't know. And being a lifelong Hawthorn fan, well, almost lifelong, mm-hmm. It's fascinating. I mean, I don't think this is the time or place to tell you the things I'm learning, because I seriously doubt any of our audience would take any interest in what those things are. But there are things that he says in this book which I did not know, and things that parts of me would actually kind of pointed me where I actually kind of like almost blew my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I did not know that. That's amazing. So if you're a football fan, and I don't know why you would be if you listen to this show, but if you're one of those rare, handsome and charismatic beasts like me, who enjoys both film, television, he drinks, sups at all, you know, the teats of our cultural feast.
Stop playing up to the audience.
There's no audience. One person. I don't even know who it is. Hello to whoever it may be. But, you know, if you like football and your arts as well, your film and TV, you might, and you're a Hawthorn fan, which is a very specific mix I'll pay. It's a fun read. It's enjoyable from somebody who actually has some access to the people. I wish I had to say I was reading something a little bit more intellectual, but it's fun. It's McDonald's reading, right?
Yeah. Sometimes that's all you need.
I've been listening. I read something where Henry Rollins recently, one of my favorite, Shay's favorite people. He hosts a radio show in the US, and he splits his listings. He calls it, protein listening and other, or carb listening, I think the other one is. So protein listening is the stuff he has to actually force himself to listen to because it's good for him. And in his case, he plays, you know, he's talking about music, but I guess in this instance, I'm talking about books, and this is definitely in the carb reading side of things. It's not good. It's not necessarily good for me, but it's enjoyable.
Cool. All right. Well, we've gone on almost like an hour and a half or so. So I think we should.
That's actually short for us.
I have had a couple of people say, yeah, it's a little bit long.
People have been saying that for about 5 years.
That's true. I might try and just break the episodes up into part one and part two, so it's a little bit more bite size. But don't hold me to that. It'll all depend if I can be bothered or not.
I am one of your hosts, George.
What are you doing? Just playing me back already. Goodness me.
I just finished the Facebook Live video. And I actually have never done a Facebook Live video before, so it's done. There's no one listening anymore on Facebook. But it starts playing it as soon as you finish it, which is irritating.
Okay. Oh, well.
I mean, what that does show is you can hear you clearly on the video. So people were hearing the whole thing. I've got a tripod coming next week. So if you are one of our Russian bot fans and you are interested, follow the Fried Grain Productions Facebook page.
Yes.
And if we can't, we'll see if we can't figure out how to go live from the Fried Grain Productions Facebook page. So, I mean, I guess you can get a sneak peek at what the podcast's about. I mean, you know, if you'd rather do it that way and see two extremely charismatic men talking over Zoom.
we're so modern age.
It's hot right now.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to another arduous show with us. Until next time, we will endeavor to watch The Gentleman as well as Tales from the Loop.
I don't need a hesitant man.
Make up your mind in a space that's right. Fish through honey, it doesn't move as slow. Time's a waste, covered in dust. You're always the last to know. I don't need a hesitant man. Best defense. This facade is beginning to show. So many holes in these curtains. Why am I always the last to know? Make a decision. Don't trip and fumble. I don't need a hesitant.